You also quickly draw the reader into your journey as the biographer. Manning Clark's particular story has a unique twist in that sense, in that he had actually come to be aware that biographers would follow his trail. And so when you came to research his life, you found in actual fact that, in a sense, he was prepared and waiting for you.
Yeah, that was one of the big surprises, I suppose. You know, you don't really expect when you go to research someone's life story that, in fact, they're sort of sitting there saying to you, come over here, come and sit on my lap and tell my story. I mean, Manning wanted us as an audience. He wanted a readership. He imagined himself being written about as a subject, so much so that in his papers throughout the collection in the National Library, there are many, many notes to who will be coming, the biographer. There are many notes to the biographer throughout his papers. And these take all sorts of different forms, where he writes directly saying, don't misunderstand, this is my underlinings here, that's someone else's underlinings, or don't trust this person, he was one of my critics or abusers, as he often says. And even in the way Manning structured his own papers, you know, comments on my work, my great friends. So he's conscious, even the way he structured his archive, he's very, very conscious that an audience is waiting, and so much so that he wants to direct the traffic, he wants to direct the story.
It's an overstatement to attribute to anyone achieving something worthwhile. All that people do is to put down in writing or on the screen what is in the air in which they are alive, in which they're living. And they must hope that what they've put down sets up a resonance in the community outside, that they have addressed themselves the questions that really matter. It's too early to decide whether anyone has achieved anything in that way, far too early. Thank God you don't have to depend on the opinions of reviewers. The important thing is the serious-minded people in Australia. They decide eventually these things, and rightly decide that.
We know how most biographies begin. We know that biographies conventionally begin with an introduction explaining the subject's importance and why this book is being written, and then why you should keep reading and how it's going to be structured and so on. And I thought, I always wanted to avoid that. I wanted to find another way of drawing the reader in. And to my mind, the best way with Manning, I'm not saying it would work with every subject, but it certainly, I think, works for Manning. I wanted to paint a portrait of him, beginning with his voice, and then moving on to his eyes, to his hair, to his way of moving and more way of walking, to his whole demeanour, to his personality, to his character, and by doing so, get the reader to concentrate just on his personality. And then I hoped that by doing that, they'd feel the same sense of intrigue and mystery about this character that I do, and I still feel. So that's what I've tried to do in that opening chapter.
Some of the early pictures that you draw, the vignettes to flesh out his personality, are highly effective in that way. And one is the story of Manning Clark in his later years writing letters to his dead parents and going to their graves and pinning the letters to the tombstones. Mm. Can you tell me about that?
Well, yeah, this was something I discovered sort of about halfway through the project, and I was in the library and working my way through another box of documents of one of the 300 or so, and there was a photograph, a blurred photograph of Manning standing next to a gravestone with a note, which, you know, just a piece of white paper in this blurred photograph, pinned to the gravestone, and his son next to him, one of his sons, and I couldn't tell which one because it was so blurred. And I found the photograph perplexing, and I wanted to find out what was going on here. And actually, I think from memory, it was the following box after that I came across one of the notes that he'd written that had been pinned to the gravestone, and it was a note which said something like, "Dear Mum and Dad, I wish you could have seen me today when I was awarded an honorary doctorate from the University of Melbourne." Now, that was written in, you know, the last years of his life. So I then went to ask Manning's son, Sebastian, his eldest son, about these visits to the gravestones. And Sebastian said to me that towards the end of his life especially, he'd made many visits out to pilgrimages, if you like, to his parents' gravestones. Not that that's unusual, I suppose, but of course the note pinning was highly unusual, and this happened more than once, as I subsequently discovered. And Manning would ask one of his sons to photograph him. So he was, again, by asking for that photograph to be taken and placing it in his papers, he was leaving another trail for the biographer, and a very filmic one too. So when I started to look into what was going on here, I realised slowly, not initially but slowly, that one of the things that was happening was that as Manning became more famous in the 1970s and 80s, his image of his parents, who had died some 30 years earlier, started to change as he became a more lauded and heroic public figure. His image of his parents also became more heroic. As he became more godlike, they became more godlike. And so I saw how Manning started to use his childhood memories and his parents, his memory of his parents, how those memories and changed over time, and how I guess it opened up questions for me and for readers, hopefully. And that is, well, how do our memories of our childhood experience and of our parents change as we experience different things in life? And how do those memories take on different significances over time? And certainly for Manning, his memory of his childhood and of his parents changed as he became a different kind of person, as he became a lauded, heroic public figure. And that whole process I found very, very just extraordinary and very, very intriguing.
I think that one's life is in part an attempt to answer the puzzles of childhood. And I think sometimes I'm tempted to believe that what you make of your life is your answer to the puzzles of childhood. And I was certainly very puzzled as a child by many things. I'm sorry I didn't speak more with my father and my mother. But it was when I began to understand, it was too late, they were dead.